Okay, man. Well, we're back, Brian. What do you think about that?
Back again. Let's see if we can mess this up this time.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you ain't messing up, you ain't trying. So, anyways, well, we've got the one and only, the best at his profession in the world. So that's what it says
world
on his...
World
famous. That's what it says on his garage door. Coots. One and only Bradley LeBaron.
And the only reason we have him on is because that's Ron's favorite animal, because that's all he seems to be able to shoot. So,
you know what? I was looking at my stats on the Ducks Unlimited app last month. Not last month, for the last year. And, yeah, we don't need to talk about the Coots numbers. they were higher than they should have been.
Even his dog can't stay away from the Coots, so...
You know what? Maybe that's why my numbers were so high. That's what I'm going to blame it on. Hey. Have you heard about my dog, Bradley?
I haven't.
Okay, so you know where Blind 5 is at in Overton?
Yep.
Okay, you know how you have that long walk back to the parking lot?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, before he gets back...
The walk of shame. No.
It's only a shame if you're with Brian because you don't shoot nothing. Anyways, but on the walk of shame back with Brian... Rock will most of the times out hunt us. He'll jump in the bushes and he'll come back with an average of between 5 and 10 coots. Not shot. He chases them down.
He janks them right out of the bushes, baby.
Yeah, I guess last year. Sometimes he takes off and I get pissed off at him. But last year, I guess he was out there and he ran into a blind and I guess old Hout was in there and he was like, "What the heck, man? Did I just watch?" And I guess he chased the coot down and the coot was like, "Oh man, he's catching me." He tried to get up and fly and Rock went into the air and just nabbed him before he could.
You know how long Ron had to train that dog to go get the coots out of the bushes so he didn't look bad? "No, really, it's my dog. I didn't shoot those. Really, it's my dog." And now Rydell's like his best friend because Rydell's like, "Coot's good. It's not bad."
Anyways, man, why'd you choose that name? Where did that name come from your taxidermy shop?
Let's see. Years ago. So, like, in my family, we all have nicknames, hunting nicknames.
Uh-huh.
And my nickname was Cooter. And basically, I got it from Dukes of Hazzard.
Okay.
And... like, I started doing European mounts about 7-8 years ago, and I named it BT's European Mounts. Then I changed it when I went to do taxidermy to Coots Taxidermy. Just, I didn't want to use, like, my last name, like, every other Plano Jano shop using last names and all that. So, I wanted something kind of catchy and where people come in the door, they're like, "How'd you come up with Coots? Like, what is it? Like, what's it all about?" and all that.
Yeah, man, that's a killer name.
Dude, you
man.
Need I mean, that combat waterfowl shirt with the coots on it. Have you seen those?
I haven't.
So it's like got coots in a tuxedo. There's another one with a pintail at the sexiest duck awards, and all in a tuxedo and the cooter paparazzi. So you need a bunch of those shirts. Start carrying their gear in your shop, man. Right. There you go.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's awesome. A catchy name, and I mean, it's not the best waterfowl. Like if you're like Mallard's taxidermy, you know, like that's the king duck or greenhead taxidermy. You're like, no, I'm going to go for like the crappiest duck around. It's not even a duck, to be honest. It's a swan family, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm going to name it Coots. So, I mean, kudos to you, man. That is a killer name, I think.
Yeah, like everybody just in my family started, took it from Cooter to Coot. And then I just like, screw it, let's do it. We're going to go Coots taxidermy. Let's do it.
Yeah, man, you're one of the major outfits in town now when it comes to producing taxidermy. How many mounts did you put through your shop last year? Do you remember? Do you got numbers?
So I just tallied everything up, and what I had on paper, there was like a little over 400.
And you produced that in a year?
Yeah.
What does that look for you on a normal week? How many mounts are you doing?
So if I'm doing antelope, I'm doing anywhere from 10 to 15 a week, just getting them done. Deer, about 10 to 12, I would say. Elk, I can get in like 5 days, I can push out like 8 to 10 bulls.
8 to 10 bulls. And like, I don't think people understand what goes into a mount. Why don't you walk us through it, like start to finish? Like, is there, like, people think, oh, I drop it off, you know, and then this beautiful head comes back. And it's awesome and looks great, but I don't.
Magic.
It's magic.
I wish it was magic.
It is not.
It is for me. You lighten my wallet and I get a mount back.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So someone comes and they drop this animal off to you. What do you have to do immediately when they drop it off to you?
So when they drop it off, obviously go through all the checklist and all that, make sure nothing's wrong with the cape, it's not slipping, and just all that.
What does slipping mean?
Like when it goes green. and the bacteria sets in, all the hair just slides right off.
You can't fix it at that point. You're done.
It's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's gone. And then you basically tell the customer,
I hope you like Euros.
I hope you like Euros or you got money to buy a new cape.
Yeah.
Usually if I have a cape laying around in the freezer, I'll just give it to them because, or they'll pay for what I paid for it. But you get it, you immediately go to skinning it off the head and carcass, whatever's there. And then my steps is I go skin and then I turn. So turning is like turning the ears, lips, nose, eyes.
Are you fleshing those ears and eyes when you're turning?
Yeah, I'm fleshing everything as I'm going.
I tried to do that on a raccoon once, man. It was not fun. But go ahead.
Yeah. Try bobcat. It's even harder.
Is it? Okay.
It's take not your fun word at all.
I don't think I'm going to try it. I didn't like raccoons. So.
So you after that, and then after you get everything turned and all the heavy meat off, it goes straight to the salt room. And then you load it up with salt. Salt it for like 24 hours, come out, check it. If it needs more salt, you take the old salt off, put new salt on. You get it like 80 to 90% dried out, then hang it up and let the rest dry.
Yeah.
After that, it goes into the tanning process. Tanning process, you rehydrate, put in the chemicals for, if it's a deer, let's say a deer, we're doing a deer. You put in the chemicals for 4 to 5 days, sits in there, and then take it out, running on a fleshing blade, which is a round knife. Flesh it, basically thins it down and gets more stretch out of it. And then sweat it overnight with tanning oil. And then rinse it off. Next day, get the form, put the horns on, antlers. And then prep the cape, just thinning everything, cleaning it up, stitching up any holes. And then start doing all your clay work and all that to the
Clay work, you gotta explain that because I've watched you do it. That's when you're actually like making muscle structure, right? For like ears and nose.
That, and then you're making the eyes, you're creating the shape of the eye that you want.
Yeah.
And then basically the clay is the detail, is what.
Yeah.
And so you do the clay, and that's like you said, doing all the muscle details, nose. Then after the clay, goes into hide paste, put the hide on, cape on, and start just tucking everything. And tucking's where you're tucking the bottom and upper lip into a slot in the form.
Yeah.
Same way with the nose, you tuck it into there. Then you go around the eyeballs, and you're tucking just like a quarter inch of skin into the clay. Then you start shaping, you tuck in your tear duct, you start shaping your eye, getting your eye the shape you want. And then, what's after that?
Yeah.
And then you start stitching it.
Yeah.
So then you stitch it all the way down the back. Hopefully it's a straight cut, not a zigzag.
Oh, man, yeah.
I get a lot of those. Those are fun to piece together. It's like, well, we'll see how this one turns out.
But with those little minor things, only you really notice. There's someone that's really into taxidermy. Like,
yeah.
You do a really good job on hiding those defects.
Yeah, well, most of the time you're not going to see it either because it's down the back. So you can hide it all unless people, I get them where they cut it into the shoulder, down low shoulder. I'm like, how?
Hey, hold on a second, Brian. Put that up that you have on that screen right there. Oh, was it already up there? Oh, you already have it up there. Yeah, that's him tucking the eyes right there.
And tucking the eyes. I got him laying a cape too. So,
we'll get old TikTok videos.
Exactly. See what happens when I pull your Facebook page up.
I know.
It's amazing how that works.
You don't hide any secrets, huh, man?
I'm not. I'm out there in the world. I'm not. If somebody wants to try it, I'll tell them to have at it. I get so many people that come in, they're like, man, I'd love to sit here and watch you or help you. I'm like, door's open. Come see what you got. I guarantee you're going to walk down and be like, yeah, I'll just let you do this.
That's you building muscle structure on the whole neck, huh?
No, that's the hide paste.
Oh, is that the hide paste?
Yeah, that's putting the hide paste on. So I've already done all the clay work.
Yeah, you can see the clay work around the eyes.
Around the eyes and the nose pad, and that's putting the cape on. Pinning it into place, getting all the shape right on it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is you can teach anybody in the world the technical stuff, but it's the artistic part of it. That
having the eye for it.
Yeah. You got to be an artist to be able to do it properly, so.
Yeah, something that I know you said is you like to focus on shoulder mounts. Like, that's your passion.
That's my passion. Big game. Yeah. That's my go-to. I love it.
Hey, you stopped off. So you said you sew it up. So what do you do after that?
So you sew it up, and then I take super glue. You super glue the hair around the burr of the horn, so it holds it over. It just holds it in place.
Yeah.
So over time, when it dries and starts shrinking, it doesn't pull away from it. You get this weird gap and bone showing through. And then after that, it's positioning the ears to which way you want the ears and lock them on. And then stretch the hide back as much as you can get it and staple it and start grooming it.
But then after that, after you do all that, there's one last step after it all dries, right?
After it's fully dry, like the clay's all dry, you got to go back and you do all your final touches where you're cleaning up around the eye and you take a two-part, it's called Magic Sculpt.
Yeah.
It's like epoxy. Take two of that and you start filling in anywhere the hide pulled away from the eye. You fill in all the gaps in and just every little thing, and then you're going back and you're painting the eyes and nose, any scars they have, and then you wipe all that down, clean it up, and then you go back and I use a Mod Podge. You put texture on the nose, and then let all that dry, and then you do your final groom on them, and then they're ready to go home.
And you're knocking out, what you said, like 5 to 6 bull elk a week doing this? I mean, I know it's a whole process. I know you're shoveling them all through, but that's still impressive for how much work goes into every single one of these animals.
Yeah, I've limited myself. Like, if I do more than 2 elk a day, like, it's rough for me to get up the next morning.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, man, here we go again. I've done 3 in a day, and I was just like, yeah, I can't do this.
I can't do this.
2's my max. They're just, everything about an elk is heavy.
Yeah.
From the form to the cape. To
just elk just in every, general.
They're heavy. They're not light. Like antelope, the most I've done in one day, I think my records, I'm up to like 7.
7 antelope. But those are smaller animals.
They're small. And
Animals are a pain in the butt because their hair always slips.
It does. It's just so brittle. Brittle, and their skin's so thin and it's hot, so.
Yeah, well, they're animals that came out of, like, they evolved, I think, out of Africa, maybe? I may be wrong, but they're meant to, when a prey grabs onto them, everything falls off. Yeah. Even their horns, you know? And yeah. So, like, you as a taxidermist, you're like, okay, you gotta try to keep it all together.
Oh, yeah. Everyone, I'm like, what kind of hair am I gonna lose this time? I look at the ground, and there's this big old pile of hair, and I'm like, man, it looks good to me. I don't see any bald spots.
But sometimes you look online and you see people get their mounts back, and you can actually see where it slipped off on certain mounts. And you're like, well, you know, what are you going to do? But that's their hide, and they got it back at least in one piece.
Well, it's part of how you take care of your animal, too. So if you throw the animal in the back of the truck and you drive it back from Utah to Vegas and it takes you 7 hours to get home and it's 90 degrees outside, you're not going to get as good of a product. Same thing with your meat.
Oh, so, you're supposed to skin it before you put it in the back of your truck?
Well, and that's what, you know, people with meat, they're like, oh, my game, everything's real gamey. I'm like, yeah, because it was in your truck for 17 hours, and you didn't put it in a cooler. You ain't having a bag. You're driving down the highway at 80 miles an hour following semi-trucks like a manure spreader in front of you. What do you think it's going to taste like?
Exactly.
I don't know why this tastes so bad. You're like, do you treat your groceries this way?
Yeah.
You know, you drive up to Ely, you buy your groceries, don't put them in a cooler. You know, you throw that chicken in the back.
Oh, yeah,
and then definitely. Drive all the way to Vegas and say, man, this chicken tastes bad.
It had some weird things growing on it.
Yeah, it was like, it smells like it's bad for some reason. Well, yeah, no crap.
Yeah. So what's the number one mistake people make? Like, when it comes, well, I guess not number one. We don't have to go number one. We all put numbers on these things. But what's the main mistake people make when they're processing an animal?
I would say the way they cut it. It's like, that's my biggest thing. When I get animals in, they're not cut right.
So you skin it from the belly up, right?
Yeah. That's a taxidermist's best friend right there. Right up, right to the bottom of the throat right here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You want to make sure he has lots of room to work.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They'll get you a free punch in
the
mouth.
Oh, yeah, I love those ones. I get a handful of those every year. I don't know, the worst place I see it is right here on their legs. So when you get to, like, the elbow joint, and then you cut around it, and what I see a lot is people cut up the front of it, and then they cut, like, they get scared and then they just go straight across, like, through the armpit into the brisket, and it's always short. The brisket and armpits are always short. If you're short on that, it's going to be short on your mount. Or if I've got some to piece in off other hides, I can piece it in, but you're going to see it. Or I tell people, like, especially in the armpits too, like, when you stitch that up trying to hide it and trying to fix it, you're always going to see a stitch in there, especially on, like, antelope. you're always going to see that stitch. And I'm like, there's not much I can do. I can make it look like a scar. But that's probably the biggest thing. My biggest pet peeve is the way people cut, like, the armpits and all that. Anything else, I'm all right with. I can fix it. It's easy to hide.
So your goal should be, when you're skinning animals, to try to keep everything from basically the mid ribs all the way up, just with one cut all the way up the back of the neck, right? And yep. If you could do that, like, if you get down to the elbows and stuff, you could tube those out.
That's what I tell everybody. I'm like, if you don't know how to cut them, just tube them. I'm happy to cut them real quick. It'll take me 10 seconds to cut it.
Yeah, just get down there and tube it out till as far as you get down, and then cut that bone and call it good.
Yep.
I remember the first time we went out with Brian and his kid, we went out and Cody shot this deer, and we wanted to do a full body mount on this deer. And so Cody's first deer, we're out there in the sagebrush, like, full body skinning this deer.
That sucked.
It was horrible, huh, Brian? Really? Only had one cut on it, right up the back end.
Yeah, we tubed everything. We tubed the legs, and then Ron went after it with a hatchet, and it looked like the beaver cut off its head, but... You know,
hey, but that was
the butcher's like, what the hell did you guys do to this deer? But the taxidermist was like, hey, I got everything I need. Yeah, so
I might have been a little frustrated after being out there on the hill trying to tube stuff. Because you're out there in the hill and there's like flies all around you and the yellow. Where do the yellow jackets come from? How do they know, man? They're always there. They're always in your business. Like, antelope season's the worst for yellow jackets.
Oh, yeah.
I think the other thing, too, people need to realize, it's a lot easier to sew up a straight cut than... a sawtooth, you know, people are like, oh, I'm just going to hack here and hack there. Well, if you can get a straight cut, so getting yourself some good skinning knives, some Havilands or something like that, to where you can pull it back and, you know, take your time not to, you know, mistakes are going to happen. We're going to cut into the hide at times, and those things can be fixed to a
little
point.
Nicks you can fix.
Those are
so
easy.
So, but if we can just take our time to do it right, have straight cuts, bring out big pieces, and that we're not chunking stuff up in a little section. Here's a puzzle, put it together for me, you know?
Yeah.
If we can do that, it's going to make the taxidermist a lot happier, and you're going to get a better product out of it in the end, because they're going to be able to do the best work they can. They're going to spend their time trying to put it back together. They're going to spend their time making it right.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, any point in that process you mess up in, it, like, accumulates. Like, if you mess up when you start skinning it, like, you're not there to help them skin it. But if they mess up when they start skinning, they bring it into you. You know, and then you have to fix that, and it's kind of an uphill battle. Or if they, like, don't, like, after you skin it, you just wrap it in a trash bag, right? Throw it on ice, and you're good. Right? Yeah. Is that what you say? Like,
yeah, like, after it's skinned, if you got it off the head, like, the face skin and all that, I airtight it in, like, a trash bag and just get it cold.
Yeah.
Immediately. And that's just going to save everything and make everything just good.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about the decomp. And so, like, if you got slippage, then you're really screwed. But then, even when it comes to your work, if you mess up on the tannin, you're going to have a bad tan, and you're going to have slippage, you know, if you mess up on the muscle structure. No one else will know. So the further you get along the process, the more if you mess up, it doesn't matter. But I've seen some people get all the way to the paint thing, and then they go and paint the eyes, and it looks like a transvestite deer.
I've seen some finished
or
process.
Or an emo deer or something. They got these big black eyes. It's like, whoa,
are you?
I've seen some finished process that they got pretty far along, and yeah, I don't think they can fix it.
Hey, let me get to the comments here. Okay, so Scotty Fowler got on here. He said, don't forget about the teal rock caught. Yeah, so rock caught a teal.
He caught a mallard too this year.
Oh, yeah.
This last year.
Before hunting. Tell that story, Brian. That's Brian. Yeah, we probably already told it. We're going to tell it again.
You guys
we're
listening
or get off.
We were out at one of our spots. We were kayak hunting, and we kayak in. And so first thing, we're setting decoys, and rock comes out with dead bird, and it was a nasty old decomp bird. So we're like I chucked back in bushes. I'm like, leave it alone. And 10 minutes later, I look by my side, and there's this mallard sitting next to me. And so I'm like, dude, no. And so Ron's like, no, we're keeping it. We're gonna count it towards our limit, right? And I'm like, no, Ron. So we keep this thing, and I'm like, dude, this thing is gonna be bad. There's no way we're eating this duck, right? It's first thing in the morning, lights, you know, right at first part of the day. So we get to the end of the day. Now, this thing, it was soft. So I'm thinking, well, they'll go through that process, right? So they'll rigor out. And then once they start to decompose, they'll get soft again. So I'm thinking, this thing's already past rigor and into decomposition. We're not eating this duck, right?
I smelled it first before I said that.
And then, like, we get to the end of the day. We got to pack all our stuff up, grab a duck, and now it's rigored. So he went in before shooting light, into the brush, found a sleeping mallard. boom, nailed it and brought it out to us. Like, look what I did, guys.
What are you guys doing? What's your problem?
And that just happened to be the day Ron and I had both changed our chokes out. That was the first time we shot with a brand new choke. Both changed the same choke. And they were setting down our decoys, and we could not hit a duck in our decoys. They were like, it'd pull up out of our decoys, go like 30 yards out, and we'd drop it.
It was so embarrassing. It was embarrassing. Okay, so Mike Reese said, I'm glad we have a taxidermy left, because we keep on losing him to, not COVID, I don't know what we're losing taxidermists to in Vegas. But
oh, like, I know what it is. Yeah. I don't want to say it, though.
Okay.
I'll keep to myself.
Yeah, you keep to yourself. And do you know Tanner Bingham?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said, I can't wait to get my shoveler back. And then he has a question. He says, what's the best way to wrap a duck to keep it in good shape to get it back to the taxidermist?
Basically, when you kill it and you know you want to mount it,
mm-hmm.
just keep it in the shade while you're out there. If you got a bag or something to put it in, just put it in a bag. And if you have the opportunity to get it on ice and just get it cooling down, that's going to be your best bet.
Yeah, what about, like, if you get it, you know, to finish it off, you go like this.
Oh, yeah. You definitely just...
Dude, ring it, stomp.
Just spin it.
If that doesn't kill it, you stomp on its head a couple times.
Right? Oh, yeah, there you go.
You know?
Yeah.
Now you just so start shaking
one,
it.
If it's one you really want to keep, what do you feel about finishers?
What do you, like...
Like, they're the finishers are like a half circle thing with a spike that you put right through the back of the neck.
They go right into the brain cap, okay, you spin them.
I don't know. It'd be fine.
Yeah, that'd be fine, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you make a hole in it, it's just going to be a very small hole or something.
Yeah. And so, the least amount of trauma you can do that duck, that's your goal.
Mm-hmm. You just want to keep... It's just like any animal you want to mount. You want to keep it in pristine condition as much as you can.
Yeah.
Give me opportunity to hide whatever you did to it. I know my brother, he called me... Well, it's probably been 2 months ago now, but he pulled a turkey out of Utah, and he's like, where do I take it? And we're like, we'll take it to Coots. And I'm like, he's like, well, I don't know if they're going to be open. I'm like, well, first come to worst, throw it in the freezer. Yeah. Right, get home, chuck it in the freezer, because guess where it's going when it gets to his shop? It's going to the freezer.
It's going to the freezer.
So I'm like, wrap it in a couple garbage bags, get the air out of it, throw it in the freezer, you'll be fine. He caught you before you were closed. Ron's like, hey, I called him, he's good, just drop it off. So, but no, if we can do that stuff and get everything started on the right track first, you know.
And if you're going to put, like, a duck in the freezer and you're going to leave it in, you're not going to get it to a taxidermist right away.
Mm-hmm.
What I've seen and been told is if you take, like, a wet napkin or something, get it wet, and you wrap the bill in, like, the head area, it'll help it cause from getting, like, freezer burnt, like, around the eyes, and then it'll hold the color of the beak of the bill.
Really?
So when you take it out and then you take pictures of it, you can get, if it has a... I don't know, say it's a mallard and it has this just like off-colored bill. It'll be, you can match that.
Save that color a little bit.
You can get photos of it before it fully dries out and just goes bad.
I know my kid's got one in the freezer now. We need to get to you, but we vacuum sealed it before we put it in.
You could do that too.
And just because we have a vacuum sealer for a big game meat, so it's just as easy. Throw it in the vacuum sealer. And that way you get all that air out of it and it stops a lot of that stuff right out of the back.
Freezer
you're not
going
to get the freezer burn. You're not going to get the loss of color a lot of times. Oh, yeah. So. You know,
that's high end, man. You're fancy,
dude. I already have.
Bradley's
stuff.
Lucky if they put it in the freezer before they bring it.
That's true. he pulls it out of the back of their truck after they just drove from Fallon down here.
Yeah, out of a freaking ice chest full of water. I'm like, what is this?
They put it in an ice chest? I thought it was just straight in the back of the truck bed.
Sometimes,
yeah. Is that the same with quail and pheasants? Is that the same way you do it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all the same.
Okay, Mike Reese asked. He said, hey, I missed it. It's the same with quail and pheasants.
Yeah. So. A lot of people, like, when you do birds, when you bring them in to me, most of the time I get birds that are frozen because
mm-hmm.
they come home and then they're going to go back out or they just collect what they want to do over time. The issue you run into is you don't know what the bird looks like. You can't, like, inspect it because it's frozen. Mm-hmm. And then I tell you, like, yeah, it should be fine if it's been frozen. Then you start fleshing it and skinning it, and you get into the pin feathers, and then you got to call a client, like, hey, this was a juvenile, or it just doesn't have, or lost feathers, and you got all these little pin feathers or spots that are, like,
bald,
or the feathers, they just don't line up, and there's, like, a weird gap in it. I'm like, what do you want me to do? I can make it look best as I can, but most of the time, people, like, just do your best, and you can hide stuff easy, especially on birds.
Like with paint, you could paint it a lot.
You could paint it, or you just shrink it up a little bit. You pinch it together.
Well, yeah. I think ducks, a lot of times people for ducks are, they're keeping a duck for a reason, right? So it's their first mallard, or it's their first pintail or whatever.
Or got some jewelry on it.
Yeah, so they're a lot, ducks aren't like a lot of big game. Big game, yeah, a lot of guys are keeping it just because, hey, I got a big mount. But it doesn't have, there's no significance. Like, somebody's not going to go get every single mallard they had mounted, right?
Yeah.
Somebody will get every single deer that they've harvested mounted just because that's the way they are.
I don't know. You should see this one mount he has in his office at his house with mallards. But go ahead, finish.
Well, no, but so a lot of times those ducks are, they're significant, right? So it's like, oh, this is my first cinnamon, right? So
yeah,
I want that. So if there's a little bit of a defect, well, it's my first cinnamon, so I still want it. You know,
just make it look good. The best you can.
I think some of the coolest mounts ever, and they're just pricier, the multi-duck, you know, mounts that you got a whole flock flying in same mount. They're awesome, but it's just like, that's a paycheck right there. Yeah,
I did. The biggest one I did 7 mallards.
Is that the one that was on your wall that I was looking at?
Yeah.
Do you have that on Facebook?
It's on there somewhere.
Here, I'll find it, Brian. But yeah.
And it was 7. It was a dead hanging mount. It was 7 of them. The guy, he brought me 14 birds. He told me to pick the best 7 because that was his limit for the day.
Uh-huh.
And the story behind that is he killed 7 within 30 minutes of hunting up in Alamo somewhere on a private lease he had.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just, he's like, it's something I've always wanted to do. And I was able to kill 7 in 30 minutes. So I'm doing it. I'm like, all right. Yeah. Here's your total.
You're like, cha-ching.
I'm like, do you even want to know the price of it?
Thanks for the truck payment, buddy.
Exactly. That's more than a truck payment, man.
That's my rent payment and truck
payment. It's like, how much do you charge per duck? And it's like $350 a duck?
$400.
$400 a duck. And so, I don't know. I ain't too good at math. But
I've seen a really cool one. It was like kind of like ducks flushing, but there were like 20 ducks in it, and they all kind of fanned out in full flight. So the whole mount was just, it was just awesome. But yeah, I'm like sitting there, $400 a duck, 20 ducks. I'm like,
that adds up pretty quick.
You know what that what the cost of that is? That costs a divorce right there. That's what that costs.
I don't know. If somebody brings me multiple animals or whatever, I cut them a discount because it's the only good thing to do.
Well,
the right thing to do is bring me multiple animals. I'm going to take care of you.
Dude, you can get them done $150 a duck.
Yeah,
but it's going to look like $150 a duck too. You know, if you want something done right, you got to pay to have it done. Especially when you're starting to look at taxidermy and stuff like that, it takes time. And if you're paying $150 for a duck to get mounted, they're not taking time on it. They're just shoving on whatever mount they have in the shop at the day, whatever form they got, and they're done.
Yep.
You know,
A lot of people, they're like, they hear my price on ducks. I'm like, do you want to try it? There's a lot of time that goes into them.
Yeah. Well, and then if you look at it, like, again, the quality back is important, but also, like, the memory. Like, are you willing to pay, like, an extra $100? Because that's what it is. Average duck is between $250 to $450.
Yep.
You know, it's right in that range, no matter where you go. And so if you pay an extra, you know, $150, you're going to have a memory that's going to be up on the wall for years. And so if you're willing to pay that quality, that's what it matters. Because, I mean, like, if you look at it from a rental standpoint, like, you're renting, like, this animal, like, over a, like, how, I mean, how long do your mounts last? Like, 20, 30 years max?
If
maybe more?
I would say mine will last a lifetime if you take care of them right and they're not in the hot garage in Vegas.
Yeah, if you take care of them, they're going to last forever, right? Yep. And so that you're paying for something that's going to last forever. You're not buying a meal.
Yeah, it's
you're
not buying a car. It's a one-time payment.
It's a one-time payment. It's going to be a memory that lasts forever, you know? And every single time you look at that, you're going to think of your kid's first hunt. You're going to think of when you shot 7 ducks in a day, you know? And, like, that's priceless when it comes down to it. And so that's why it kills me sometimes when I hear mounts get messed up and mounts don't get back to people. I'm like,
oh, I hate that. I get so many phone calls during a week about, this taxidermist won't respond to me, and he doesn't have my horns, or this and that, and I have this kid working for me, Jaden. They used to take their animals to a shop here in town. I'm not going to say the name. And I think like 2.5 years went by or something, he was telling me, and they got a phone call. They were doing a double mount, an antelope and a mule deer on it, on like a wall pedestal or something. Went in to go pick it up. They had the antelope was theirs, but the deer wasn't. It was like 180-inch 4-point, just super wide, cool looking buck.
Yeah,
couldn't, like, not another buck. It looks like it, and it was a complete different buck. And they're like, "Well, that's my antelope, but whose buck is that?" And they're like, "That's yours." He's like, "No," and showed them pictures. They're like, "Well," and just kind of just trying to change subjects and all that. I'm like, how do you lose somebody's stuff?
Well, especially something you can't get back.
Well, I mean, if you're backlogged so far, you can only keep track of stuff for so long. It's tough.
But it's about being a good businessman, too. So you got to put processes in place. I mean, you can't just go and get another 180-inch buck that was a unique buck, right?
Yeah,
it's you have one opportunity in the taxidermy business to get it right.
Yeah, it's not like a duck or a badger where they all kind of look the same. There's nothing different. Yeah. You can, if you do mess up on a bird, just say, you could be like, well, I got another one in the freezer. It looks pretty close. Nobody's going to know, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've never done it. But I know there's places that have done it. But, like, when it comes to antlers and all that, I'm like...
They're all pretty distinct, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
When you remember the buck you shot, right? I mean...
Everybody, you got photos of it.
It's pretty easy.
It's like, the buck right there.
My kid's... everything he's ever shot has been super unique. Everything he's shot super tall.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not wide. They're not branched out wide, but they're super, super tall, like ridiculously tall. So, you know, if you put a standard buck in there, I'm like, That's not the same thing, right? And so then it doesn't... The cool thing about taxidermy is every time you look at that mount, whether it's some exotic you got in Africa or a deer you shot, it brings back the memories of that hunt, right?
Exactly.
And so now if you're looking at an animal that's not even yours...
It doesn't mean nothing.
You just paid for something that did nothing for you, right? Exactly. You might as well go to a yard sale, get on eBay, and buy yourself a mount because that's what you did.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Well, and not only that, but people get so excited to come to your shop to pick up their animals, right? They're, like, pumped for the most part.
Yeah. When they come and pick them up, finally.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I tell people, like, my turnaround's, like, 6 to 8 months on deer and antelope, which I don't think is very bad at all. Compared to some other shops here in the valley, they're...
No, not even in the valley. Plus. Like, yeah. in the state or in, like, Utah, even.
Yeah, and I'm like, all right, and then I call them and tell them it's done, or just say 6 months comes up, and they're calling me. Hey, just, want to check on my mount. What's going on with it? I'm like, it's in the works. I'm working on it. They're like, okay, yeah, no rush. Well, when I get it done in say like 3 weeks, I call them. Oh yeah, it's gonna be like 2 or 3 weeks till I can come and get it. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
I only got so much wall space I can work with.
Yeah. No. Like, that. Yeah. You run out real estate quick.
Like right now, I'm sitting. I think I got like 17 deer. The last of my deer that they've been done for 2 weeks now, 2.5 weeks now, and I've called everybody. Some people, they're out of town, vacation, whatnot. Okay, I understand that. That's life. But some people, they don't answer. They'll call me back in 2 weeks, and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to come over and get it now. I'm like, yeah, sure you are. But, like, it comes to the point, like, I don't want to be that guy that's been, like, becomes an asshole.
Calls them back to back to
back to back. I usually call, like, once a week. If I don't hear from them. If they don't answer my first call, I'll give it like 2-3 days. I'll call them again. But then if they don't, then I'm like, all right. I don't want to be that guy. Be like, well, you're going to get charged after 2 weeks, $5 a day for storage fee.
Yeah. But I mean, you usually get them picked up, man. What's the longest you've had to hold on to them out for somebody?
A year and a half.
A year.
Luckily, it was just a Euro. It was just a skull mount, so it was like whatever. I put it in my house.
So it doesn't come pick up their tax and she's like, well, I guess I'm moving this in the house till it gets picked up.
This guy dropped it off. It was like a couple months after it killed. It was in the freezer. It was an antelope.
Uh-huh.
And then it was like the following year and some. He called me. He's like, hey, man, I got a couple of deer I want to drop off, and also I want to pick up my antelope. I'm like, oh, you finally want to come get it after it's been on my wall for a year. I told you it'd be done in 2 weeks.
So you got to branch.
Your Euro turnaround's 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Well, when you're really busy, what's the max time for your Euro turnaround?
Like last year, I was like a month.
Golly, man, that is fast.
See, what you just got to use it as a different business model. So you got the taxidermy side. You know, all these banquets want mounts and stuff for their banquets. Just start renting the bad boys out.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh, that's yours? Yeah, you can go ahead and take it home now. Yeah, pay me.
Yeah. Here, we'll charge your car right here on my phone.
Exactly. I got you. I got you, boo.
That's awesome, man. You got that coot picture up there, Brian? Brian found your logo, man.
The shirt. There you go.
Oh, I'm going to have to get one.
Cudicus Maximus. Wait, there's another one.
You got to transition over to it so everybody has to see it.
Yeah, there we go.
So they can see You should sell it in your shop as merch, man, so people can...
Yeah, I should reach out to these people, like, man, let me put my logo on it somewhere. We'll come and, like,
there you go.
Sell some.
He's got some pretty cool shirts and stuff, but it's all one. I don't know if he's going to have his one up here. There you go. Spoonie on a ATV. Here's a typical wood duck.
That's awesome. So
that's my son's favorite duck because it's the mullet of the duck world. They got a coot on riding a shark, you know. But there was another one. He's got the right stuff, guys, here. He had one posted today on his... He does a lot of TikTok stuff. And it was literally... It's a pintail and a tuxedo at the Sexiest Duck Awards with coot paparazzi in the background. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's just different stuff, you know. And it's not your typical, you know, your typical duck shirt. And
okay. Yeah. So what's the most common thing you see other taxidermists kind of mess up on when they're finishing their mounts? Or what's the most common thing you see that you're like, man, they could do better, but the customer's not going to really notice?
So my big, like, what I see is it's all in the face. It's all in the eyes. Every mount, it's the eyes. If you don't do the eyes right, it's not going to look right. The animal just isn't going to be, you're going to look at him and be like, if I look at him, be like, if I go into Sportsman's or Bass Pro, I'm like, I just put my head down and walk to where I'm going because I don't want to look at all that because I start picking shit apart. I'm like, no, I can't do this. But I think the biggest thing I see...
picture you like being at like an art museum, but like it's like taxidermy mounts, and you're like,
this is that.
I don't even know artist works. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure my stuff would get picked apart too. I know I'm not the best, but some of the stuff I see, I'm just like, okay. I want to reach out to this person, but hey, man, you want... So need a little help here and change this up, try this.
Yeah. So a little mentorship. But, like, I noticed one thing that when we were dabbling in taxidermy, making a mess of it, but I remember one thing that we'd always pick apart is the noses. Like, some taxidermists don't do all the inner nose.
Yeah, the gut out, make where you see the...
It looks like a nasal cavity.
Yeah, where you can see into it.
Yeah.
That's a big thing, too.
Yeah. And so, like, that attention to detail goes a long ways, where the normal Joe client won't really notice it, but, yeah, you'll definitely.
I love when people come pick their mounts up, and they take them home, and they put them next to their other mounts, and they send me a picture. They're like, oh, my, yours looks like it's about to blink, and these other ones are, like, scared or something. I'm like, I mean, the way I learned was, like, competition-style work, and that's what I put into every piece. I've changed up a couple things from what I learned 6 years ago. Just easier way to do things, but...
Well, I think Ron's a little hard on himself. I mean, he did his pretty good work back in the other shop. I mean, this is one of his best mounts. Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, look at the detail on that. Look at that nose detail.
I was
on
trying to make it look just like Brian. I think I did an okay job.
Look at those teeth on it.
I mean,
nailed it.
I don't understand. I think he did a pretty good job. I mean, that's money right there.
Yeah, I'd love to come pick that up. I'd be excited.
Dude, that's like a $2,500 taxidermy job right there.
What do you think that's made out of right there? Is that rabbit?
It's a Yeti, dummy.
Maybe a rabbit or a mountain goat.
Are those human teeth also?
Kind of looks like it. It went to the dentist and got them pulled out or something.
Because the hockey player's like, hey, hold on to those. I've got an idea.
I haven't seen my supplier sell those teeth yet. I got to go check them out. I've always thought about, you ever seen like Bar Rescue?
Yeah.
You ever seen the show?
Yeah.
Like, make a show, Taxidermy Rescue.
There you go. I mean, I'm sure there's some great ones. I mean, you want some sea life? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Get yourself some sea life.
That reminds me, like my wife on April Fool's this year. She went out to my shop and she put googly eyes on all my mounts. And she knows, like, I'm very anal about it. Like, don't touch my mounts. When they're done, do not touch them until, like, clients come pick them up. I like hold them until they get to the door.
Yeah.
I'm like, once you get it, it's on you. But like just playing with things or outshaping the hair and all that drives me nuts. And she went out there and put googly eyes on everything. I walk out in the morning, turn the lights on, and it just, I had a 190-inch mill deer in velvet that had a turn. It was looking at the door as I walked out, and the thing was staring right at me. I'm like, and I started looking at everything. I'm just like, she came out and she's like, she started laughing. I was like, man, I was like, wait until you get the papers at work for a divorce. She's like,
didn't you like literally get married like months ago?
Yeah, that was probably 6 months after, like something like that. We just had our year anniversary.
How long were y'all together before you got married?
8 years.
8 years. So she knew about the whole taxidermy lifestyle then.
Oh yeah, she was with me when I got into it.
There's a different lifestyle to it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like you have a few different seasons, right? You have hunting season, mm-hmm. which is just nuts, right? She probably doesn't see you. And there's always some weird guy in the garage telling you a story.
Yep.
Am I right?
Oh, 100%.
Like half your job as a taxidermist is to listen to their story.
Gotta love them. Sometimes they work out good because I get their honey holes. Everybody tells their taxidermist everything to the, like,
we won't give you our honey holes. We don't do the honey hole
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. I mean, some people, I'm like, you know, just some things you shouldn't tell me. I don't need to know.
Yeah, he was like, you're like, why does it have two holes in the hand? He's like, well, I shot my spotlight on it. It went like this.
You're like, yeah. Well. I'm like, some things I hear, I'm like, you know, what if I was partnered with, like, Endow or something, the game wardens, and they had mics in here, and they're listening.
Yeah.
Or what if they're just in the other room auditing something?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, just don't. I don't need to know everything that happened. Just tell me the basics.
Oh, spotlight driving like down the road.
What's that lawyer thing? Like, you can't, like, I don't want to be implicit in the crime. Oh, don't disclose everything client. To me.
Yeah, lawyer client privilege. Yeah. And you got taxidermy privilege. Yeah, like, I don't think that works out real well.
Yeah, like, if you tell me something, I have to acknowledge it. But if you don't tell me, I can say I don't know.
Yeah, and it's you'd think it's like the kids that would spurge out and say something like that. It's not. It's the parents.
I think sometimes it's they're doing it so long that it's just nothing. Natural to them. It's like, so I was driving down the road doing 60 and I popped this deer as we were driving. I had to turn around because I couldn't stop fast enough.
Exactly, yeah. I don't know, like one story, some guy, he came in, his kid was 11, mm-hmm. almost aged to hunt. This guy's been hunting for years and he let his 11-year-old shoot his deer because I was like, I don't care about that. I'm all game for it. Get the kids into it. We need more kids into this. That's our next generation of hunters. And I'm like, just don't go out running your mouth about it because legally you get in trouble.
Yeah,
I mean, like, don't. Just.
We just had the game wardens at the Woods and Water.
Yeah, we were just talking about
that.
Talking about party hunt.
Party hunting.
Yeah.
There is no party hunt in the state of Nevada, so I don't care. You could put in for a group hunt and we can all draw tags together, but each of us has to shoot our own animal. And that's the other thing. I mean, duck hunters get into it and it'll get them a lot of time, especially with the federal wardens. So you're all sitting there and you're all shooting ducks and everybody throws them in the pile and, you know, then he's like, okay, which ducks are yours? You know? And so a lot of guys, what they'll do is they'll have a certain tag system. So if it's your duck, they'll tag it this color, zip tie it or however, because realistically it doesn't matter if you got three people in a blind, that doesn't mean you have a 21 duck limit. I mean, you have seven per person. Once you're done with your seven, you're done.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, the game wardens, that they'll write tickets on that stuff. So you got to be careful of what you do and how you do it. And, you know, if you have other people out, take as many people as you can get in the blind, get new guys out hunting, but make sure we teach them right to do it in the first place. So that way we don't get into the situation where I go into a taxidermist shop and I'm like, hey, yeah. So I shot these 9 ducks yesterday, but my buddy was with me, so it's okay. So
it's okay.
Could you mount them?
Yeah.
You know?
I ran in a couple years ago. I'm not a big, I'm kind of a duck hunter, but I don't know how to, like, tell ducks apart. Like, I'm not, I can look at a duck, like, yeah, it's a duck. You know, I can shoot that duck. Or when they come in, sometimes I got to go on Google. I'm like, what is a red duck with a duck with a red head?
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a red head, but
yeah.
Just trying to figure out what the species is. And it was a federal game warden. They stopped us. We killed one duck. And he checks us as we're leaving. He's like, you guys get anything? I'm like, yeah, we got one. I shot one. He's like, oh, what kind? I said, a duck.
A duck.
One that you could
shoot. A dead one.
And he's like, oh, okay. We get out and he's looking at it. He's like, you don't know what kind of duck it is? I said, no, I know. I'm allowed to shoot it. I know it's in season. And he's all like, it's a widgeon. I'm like, oh, okay, see, that's what it is.
Well, there's
good job. You knew, man.
See, I was testing you.
I am glad you are here.
Well, and the funny thing is, so we use I think it's a master's book or whatever it is, but it's a book you can take, and it shows you, not only does it identify by your typical, but you can lay the beak up against the book, and it'll tell you by beak size and shape. It does it that way. but it also gives you flight elevation. So certain ducks tend to fly certain elevations. Like you're going to look at, what are they? The
mallards fly higher than the tip.
Buffleheads will skim the water, right? So they're going to be super low. Well, your mallards are going to be a little bit higher. Your widgeon are going to be in a little different elevation. So you can look at, just kind of get familiar with where everything flies, and then it limits you to, like, okay, now there's these five ducks. Okay, well, that duck's got white, so obviously now it limits it a little bit more. You can do a lot better. Or you can do the Overton method. You shoot it, lays on the ground, and you're like, I wonder what kind of duck that is. You know?
Find out at the end.
Exactly.
I hope the game board comes by and can help me out.
Yeah, I hope you can identify. Exactly. Well, we have a story. The guy that runs the WMA out in Overton, his dad was a game warden out there for a long time, and so somebody comes up and he's like, hey, what kind of ducks are these? And you go, well, boy, those are ticket ducks, because you're about to get a big fat ticket. You know, so, and that's the thing, is that's the hard, one of the hardest things about duck hunting is identifying. And is the more you get into it, the more ducks you see, the more you see them fly, the more you see how they fly. So like if it's screeching at 80 miles an hour, it's got a redhead, it's going to be a canvasback 9 times out of 10. If it's a little bit slower, it's going to be a redhead. So you get it, you get to see it, and the more you see them fly, and the more you see the ducks work, and kind of see their flight patterns, and just being able to tell at a distance if it's a duck versus another bird.
Yeah.
Ducks have an erratic flight pattern. They're not a rhythmic flyer. So you can look at that and say, okay, that's going to be a duck coming in versus the hawk that's been flying around for 6 weeks. So it's big to know those things, but it takes practice.
Oh, yeah. Just like anything.
We get Rydell on here all the time, and Rydell, for a long time, there were a lot of ducks that he wouldn't shoot, because he couldn't identify him in flight. So he'd rather be safe than sorry. And it's...
Yeah, he's a very ethical hunter.
But it's a big thing, because if you can only get one pintail and you don't know what you're shooting at, you drop a second one,
you're in trouble.
It's a big fat
and
ticket.
And those hen pintails, I mean, like, all those hens are brown. Mallard hen's brown, a widgeon hen's brown, a gadwall hen's brown. Like, if you shoot one hen pintail, you're like, well, I'm scared to shoot anything else. I was with my buddy Scotty Fowler, and we shot one. He's like, I'm going home. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, no, I'm just scared of him. I don't want to risk it.
Well, and that's that. At that point,
you I talked him into staying. I was like, listen, man, he'll be okay.
But you pull the drakes out.
He'll be all right.
Then you're hunting drakes for the rest of the day, right?
Yeah.
So if there's
or
a question.
Or teal, you can hit teal.
Yeah, teal, drakes. I mean, if there's a question, you just move on to what you can shoot. You know you can shoot. So if I see a big spot of white, well, it's not going to be a pintail hen. Obviously, it's got a bunch of white on it, so I'm going to drop it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, then again, it could be a pintail. It could be a pintail drake, but they're pretty identifiable.
Pintails are awesome, man, because they have them big old long necks. And they sit up high in the sky, and they look at you. They just, like, circle, like I swear it's like 100,000 times. And then, like, if you're at Overton, you're praying, you're like, please don't mess this up. Someone in the next blind, please don't mess this up for me. And it's circling. In a circle, and then someone messes it up every single time, and you're like, the pen's like, I'm out of here. Well, and you're like,
and the pens are the hardest ducks, I think, to get into your decoys, because they do. They're super cautious. They'll spin around, and they'll watch that forever. Every other duck in the world is coming flying down in, but you want the pintail, so you're not going to take a shot on the pintail, and somebody else next to you decides, oh,
Skybusters.
There's a coot over there. Like, I'm going to shoot that coot, and Ron shoots a coot, and then not only does it blow the pin out of the hole, but every duck that was on the water now is gone. So, they're beautiful birds. I mean, they're some of the coolest birds ever. I think for me personally, that's my favorite bird to shoot.
I think my favorite duck is a wood duck. Wood duck and a cinnamon till.
I love cinnamon tills.
Those cinnamon tills are awesome. Birds.
I know this is not a very pretty duck, but just because it's like one of the most abundant ducks we have in Southern Nevada, and it's rare to other places, is the canvasback.
Yeah.
Like, we have a lot in Southern Nevada.
Well, and people will travel all over the United States to try to shoot canvasback, and we're lucky enough that we go in the backyard, and when the cans are in, man, the problem we have is the cans are in, you have your limit of two cans, and they're coming 10, 20, 30 at a time of your decoys. And you can't shoot. That's the most frustrating hunting you'll ever do. It's like, I just want to shoot a duck.
You get out of here.
You know, and so that's, for us, it's a challenge, because you get your two and you're done. But for other people, they die for the opportunity to shoot cans like we have here. And, you know, we get them down south later in the season, but up around Elko in that area, that's some of the best can hunting in the world. So, I mean, you can go up there and you can get a lot of really nice birds up out of there.
Yeah.
See, I like buffalo heads on a pass. So those are
it's just birds too.
Well, they're just fun to shoot.
Are they?
So they're screaming across.
You get them on an open lake, and they're going like 45 miles in front of you.
And they're pass shooting. So once you see them, if you're not dropping them as soon as you see them, they're gone. I mean, so you literally have a split second, and your lead is you got to double your lead versus another duck almost. So, but they're fun to shoot because it's just a challenge.
Yeah. So, well, we got a public comment from Nate. He says we're lying, but I don't know what he's talking about. Anyways,
the Nate best doesn't thing about, even hunt.
I know. The best thing about bubble heads is you have like a multiple chances. Like he'll shoot once, you're like, I'm behind him, and you'll like cock the gun way in front of you, like boom.
Well,
and it's almost like you're bounced, like you're chest passing a bullet to a bird.
And they're dumb because
they hit it and it goes boom, boom, boom.
And you'll shoot at them, right? And you'll miss them on the pass. 10 minutes later, they're coming back the other way. They'll make multiple passes right in front of you after you just shot at them. So you usually get a couple opportunities on them if you do miss, but.
Yeah.
I'm taking after you, Nate.
Anyways.
Learning from the best.
Hey, so what do you think your favorite bird to mount is? Like out of every species, not just duck.
The bird that doesn't have to mount.
Exactly. Yeah, you do focus on shoulder mounts, but what do you think the prettiest bird to mount is, and what's your favorite like mounting position?
Damn peanut gallery out there.
Yeah.
I would say if we had more of them, wood ducks.
Yeah.
So were lucky.
They're cool. And I mean, they're easier to line up because they got so many different colors in them. And you could just match colors and feathers.
Really? Now, when you're talking about lined up, explain what that means.
I like putting the position of the feathers so like it looks. So if you like look at a duck that's sitting in the water, they look smooth.
Like, I know, but like you actually have to like put tape on them, right? Like line the feathers up and then like hold them in place.
Tape them into place.
There's a lot of time in that.
Oh yeah, that's why I'm not a fan of ducks. I mean, I'll do them, but I can do two ducks in a day compared to four shoulder mounts.
Yeah,
but like when you do setting like back feathers and all that, you take like a pin. And you're putting it under the feather, and you're just moving it into place. Like when I was in taxidermy school,
mm-hmm.
The pheasant I did, just lining up all the different patterns and everything to it, I spent 4.5 hours, 5 hours almost just lining it up. And then the mallard I did, I think I ripped 50-something holes in it, I counted, and I was stitching. Birds are so forgiving. I stitched them all. And I called it Franken duck, but it turned out good.
Franken duck.
And I told my teacher, I was like, man, if I got to spend another 5 minutes on this damn bird, it's going out the window. It's going to fly. I was like, this is not for me.
But yeah. We actually, there are some wood ducks down in the south. We pulled out of Overton 1 year, they pulled a dozen. And we had 3 or 4 out of the dozen out of Overton. But we just, our Wildlife Habitat Improvement Nevada, we just put up a bunch of wood duck boxes down along a section of river down in southern Nevada. And so hopefully...
10 of them.
Yeah, so hopefully we can give them some more habitat to nest a little bit better, and hopefully we can increase that population. But it's a tough hold down here. I mean, they brought them in from Reno.
Yeah.
And they just didn't hold like they thought they would.
Well, the problem with birds is they migrate.
They migrate
right back to where they were.
And they're predator, you know, so where the bigger ducks, you know, there are certain predators that aren't going to go out to the bigger ducks. The wood ducks are a smaller duck. Every predator on the face of the earth can pretty much take on
chicken
a wood duck.
Delicious.
Yeah, it'd be like a skunk will get them. Yeah, they don't even care. And they can walk around with their cool-ass mullet, you know, head and be like, hey, look what I got.
Yeah, they blend in really well in southern Nevada.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So what does your hunting season look like being a taxidermist? How hard is that?
It's rough. It is rough. If you're a hunter and you want to be a taxidermist, don't do it. Because you got to pick one or the two. Luckily, I mean, my wife hates it because she doesn't get to go out as much as I do. But
yeah.
I tell her, I'm like, here, I'm going out for a week. You're in charge. But I don't know. You got to plan it out like months in advance. Like when you get tags, results and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, well, I'm taking off these 4 days for this hunt. And then, okay. And then like come antelope season on the 22nd of August.
Mm-hmm.
I don't plan nothing because I get slammed. Last year, I brought in 32 antelope opening day. I was up till like 3, 4 o'clock in the morning skinning antelope out.
You used to do math?
Yeah. These right, a couple of those.
meth, a little bit of crack,
a little bit of Monster, a little bit of Red Bull.
It's tough. It's not easy. I know the last 6 years that I've been doing taxidermy full time, and it sucks. There's a lot of times and then want to get out and go scout for units like with my brothers and all that. I'm like, now I'm locked in this weekend. I got to work. I got stuff to do. I got to stay caught up.
I've got people's memories. I want them back.
My biggest goal is to get everything out and done before the new season starts.
Yeah. So then you're playing catch up when it comes around
and trying to fit in mounting an animal while animals are coming in. Taking 7 hours to mount this one. Hopefully it's still in good shape. It's not drying up already with the heat and just playing all the factors.
You know what the worst part about that is the whole time that you're like, man, I wish I could go. Everybody's coming in with like these stellar animals is telling you stories. Like that has to be like the biggest blue balls moment ever for a hunter.
It is, but I get used to it. That's kind of like if I don't get to go hunt, I still get to see animals come in and hear stories. I love hearing the stories. I'm with a client for 30 minutes at least, every client, hearing their story and just talking about it because they're excited. And I'm a big hunter, so I know the feeling and everything.
Live vicariously through them.
What do you do when they come back to back to back to back? You're just like, hey, you have to get in line and listen to his story first.
Yeah, you see that door right there? There's a line around the corner. Make sure you stay 6 feet apart.
Bring me a beer while you're at it. You know, and I think that's one of the things that sets taxidermy apart from a lot of other businesses. So if I own a tire shop or I'm a mechanic, I can hire 10 tire techs. You know, I get busy. Boom. I want to go on vacation. There's 10 guys. Fill it in. I have a manager that runs it, right?
Yeah, figure it out.
In a taxidermy shop, you can't do that. So you can have an apprentice or an understudy that you're teaching, but it's not the same, right?
It's not.
So you've got to have a hand in every single mount.
And everybody that brings something in, they want to talk to the guy that's mounting it.
Yeah.
Like when my wife brings stuff in, like last year, I was gone for 7 days deer hunting with my buddy in Maine that drew a tag here in Nevada. And I was gone and she was bringing in deer throughout the 7 days I was gone. And she's like, some people were kind of jerks to me. And I'm like, who? Put a star next to their name because that's bullshit. Yeah. I was like, I'll call them and tell them because that's not how it's done. Just because I know they want to talk to me and the guy that's mounting it, but I have a life too. I want to get out and...
Well, not only that, that's your wife, man. She's doing you a favor. And so, like, what if you're just like, oh, we're not taking any mounts for these 7 weeks or for these 7 days, you know? Like, oh, my wife wants to go with me, so we're shutting down the shop for 7 days.
Well, that's the alternative, right? You just shut it down and nobody can bring anything in, so...
Yeah, but then I don't get any work. So it's a catch-21 kind of. Yeah.
Just saying, like, it's considerate for you to offer an option.
Oh yeah.
You know, and so like when they're dropping it off, like they could be mean to you, but be nice to my wife.
Yeah, and especially if it's 9, 10 o'clock at night, you're dropping stuff off. She's staying up to help you out, so you don't got to worry about that animal spoiling or anything.
Does she do the heads when they bring them in, or does she save them for you?
She brings them in, and then she won't skin them. She's kind of learning how to skin. She does like Euros. She practices on and helps me with that.
Yeah.
Or if I got to, like, when I'm caping stuff out, I'll put them in a bucket and I'll fill a bucket up and take them to my salt room. She'll come in and she'll take those out and salt them, bring it back. Or if I got a bunch of Euros in the backyard that are cleaned, she'll go back there on the weekend and bleach them all for me. Oh, she helps me a lot. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. And especially those zeros, man, those kind of stink. Like, the whole process of taxidermy kind of stinks. It's either chemical smell. Like, when they get it back, you've cleaned it up nice, and they put it in their house, and then they put... do you recommend Showshine? That's what we used to always say.
There's this new company I'm working with. It's called... They're called Velvalock Technologies.
Yeah. They smell great.
Yeah, and it's velvet clean. Like, they make the velvet forever... stuff you spray on your velvet.
Preserver,
yeah.
Yeah.
So they make that. They've got a cleaner, and that's what I use is the cleaner. Every animal that goes out, I spray the cleaner on it, and it cleans it, gives it a shine. You can spray it on the horns, and it'll dry it back to normal.
It's like a nice orangey smell, right?
Kind of, yeah. And then I think you've smelled it before I've showed you.
Yeah.
And then they got a blood remover, so for like antelope, once you kill it, and then they bring it in, you just spray it, and it literally just wipes the blood out. It'll take it out of your packs. And they just came out with a new product. It's called Hide Lock, and it's so if you're out in the mountain, you kill an antelope, you spray it on it, and it won't rot it out. It'll it'll like set the hair in.
Almost salts it, huh?
Basically. And he did a trial and error with it, and he was talking to me going through it all. He took a raccoon and split it in half, left one side out that didn't have nothing done to it, and sprayed the hide lock on the other side to see what would happen. Took him to a taxidermist, had him tanned. And the other one, you could see where it slipped a lot of the hair. And the other one, I mean, pristine. I was like, that's not a bad idea.
So that's a good product for hunters to grab before they go up. Especially if you're going to be remote somewhere.
I try to push it with antelope.
That, and then archery. Archery deer, yeah, when they're in velvet. I try to tell everybody they call me, I'm like, just come get a bottle. It's not that expensive. You're paying like what they're charging, but it's here. You don't got to do the shipping and all that.
What is it? Well, how much do you charge for the bottle?
I think it's like 25 or 30 bucks.
That's what you charge at your shop is 30 bucks.
But like we had this year.
But yeah, hold on, I want to finish the velvet thing with him. Like, explain what happens if you don't take care of your velvet.
It'll rot out. It'll just start slipping right off.
It gets stinky as crap, starts to boil up.
Yeah, like.
And then it just falls off, and you've lost this nice velvet thing. And like the other option is what? You throw it in a cooler? Like, and if you get a big deer, like.
You're not fitting that in an average cooler.
Yeah. So that way you're like getting trash bags and like throwing it in the back of the truck with trash bags and ice, hoping you make it back to Vegas.
Exactly. And like this stuff, you don't have to inject it. You just spray it and walk away.
Yeah.
And it in 72 hours.
It smells delicious. Don't spray it in your mouth.
Yeah.
Well, that's the, I mean, we saw this year, even we talk about archery season, but this year, even muzzleloader season, I mean, I would say probably 30% of the bucks we saw during muzzleloader season were still in velvet.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was incredible because normally most of them are out of velvet by then. You might get one or two.
You might get a few pieces on it.
Yeah, but this year.
It's all dried up already at that point.
This year, everything was still almost in velvet. It was just absolutely crazy. So you get that, but then you're looking at, it was still pushing 100 degrees coming down off the mountain. So, so when you're doing that, you want to do something to preserve that as much as possible so you can use it later.
Yeah, that's what I tell people. I'm like, you take this little spray bottle this big, it'll fit anywhere. You kill a buck in velvet, just instant spray it, and then you don't got to worry about nothing.
It's insurance policy, man.
It is.
It's insurance policy. So if you don't use it, you use it next year, right?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't go bad. It doesn't expire.
Nope. Well, I
don't know if it does or not. That might be false advertising.
It probably does.
I think
they say
try to get new stuff every year. But. Yeah.
But even at 30, so you're spending, hunting trip's not cheap.
Hunting's not cheap, period. So it's not a cheap personal sport.
You know, for twice what you put in just for the opportunity to draw, because I think it's 15 bucks a species for just a
application.
For your application fee. So for two application fees, you can make sure you save your velvet and your hide. I mean, that's pretty cheap, right? So you're gonna spend a couple grand to go out and hunt half of the time anyways.
Oh, yeah.
30 bucks is nothing.
Yeah, that's nothing. Like, I had a couple buddies last year. They came and got the velvet lock from me. And he killed a buck, and he sent me a video of him spraying on. He's like, is this how I do it? I used the whole bottle on, made sure everything was covered. I was like, yeah, you probably overdid it, but good. You can't overdo it.
You can't overdo it. It's all about the saturation there.
And, like, his velvet, I mean, it came out perfect. Not a rub mark. I mean, it was beautiful.
That's awesome.
It's just what the price you pay. You want to take the risk, or do you just want to spend the 30 bucks and know it's going to be good?
Well, you're going to get a better product out of it at the end.
Exactly.
So if you can almost guarantee you're going to get a better product out of it, 30 bucks is nothing.
Yeah.
What are you going to pay for the mount? You know, it's not even 10%. You know, okay, I think we're good.
30 bucks waste at a gas station in a couple of days.
that's how much I spend on energy drinks in one day duck hunting.
That's how I spend one night skinning animals out in antelope season.
You just got to pound them back to back and hope the heart holds up.
Exactly.
Ron ain't lying either.
Yeah, Brian. Remember that one time we were at Sunnyside and we sunk that boat and I was like 5 Red Bulls into it, still falling asleep driving?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I pounded 2 back to back. I'm driving home and like I'm swerving all over the road. And my buddy Jared goes, hey, listen, you need to pull over. I'm going to drive. And I was like, okay, that sounds good, man, because I'm not awake.
That reminds me of when I went to taxidermy school. I came home, left Friday. I got up at like Friday morning at like 4 in the morning, loaded my truck up, went to school, finished school, and then drove home that same night. My wife was with me, girlfriend at the time, and I drove all the way from Montana to Vegas all through the night. And I remember pulling into Cedar. I'm like just juiced up on Red Bull and in Copenhagen and just jamming out to music.
Windows rolled down so you get the breeze in your face, you don't fall asleep.
Exactly. Yeah. Sitting there doing one of these. Wake up. Okay, I'm falling asleep. I need to put on a good song that, wait, something loud. I roll into the gas station at Cedar, and I go in there. This lady, the clerk, she probably thought I was on some good stuff. My eyes are just freaking bloodshot. They're huge. And I'm just sitting there. I was surprised I wasn't twitching out and all that. She's like, late night? I said, yeah, I've been up since like 4 a.m. driving home from Montana. She's like, oh, and I had like two of the tallest Red Bulls. I was like, one of those is going to get pounded before I leave. But then all that construction was going through the gorge.
Uh-huh.
And it was down to one lane and it was tight.
Oh, no.
And I'm driving through that and the wife, she's just like kind of like in and out of like sleeping. And I just kept thinking through my head. I had a big lifted F-150. I'm like, man, what if I just bumped that side rail and I just whoop? It just kept playing in my head. I'm like, oh, this ain't good. I'm only like an hour and a half from home. Just stay awake.
I smell colors.
It does smell colors. What's the color purple smell like? You know what? It doesn't hurt when you're out doing that. Just to pull over for a second, take an hour nap, and then keep going. That's what I've learned. Like, you could just pull over and take a nap, or you could just let Jared drive.
Yeah.
Or Ron just will put John Wayne movies on and watch the John Wayne movies while he's driving, so.
Yeah.
Movies keep you awake, man.
Oh, yeah. Like, me and my brother, he does asphalt, and
I thought you were going to say acid. I was like, whoa.
Whoa.
That just took a different turn.
He does the good stuff. Now, he got off working, like, he's working a night shift, and we were running cameras up north. And he's like, we need to go put these cameras up. I'm like, all right, are you going to be all right? He's like, yeah, I'm running on like 2 hours of sleep. I'm like, well, boy, here we go. And we're driving up and throughout the day, just walking into places, putting cameras, it wears you out.
Mm-hmm.
And we're driving home and I told him, and he's driving still. I'm like, I'll drive. He's like, no, I'm good. I said, well, I'll tell you one thing. If you stop talking to me, my eyes are going to fall asleep. I was like, you're on your own, so keep talking to me. I was like, because if I stop talking, you're going to sleep. If you stop talking, I'm going to fall asleep. We're probably going to be on the side of the road somewhere, upside down or something. He's like, all right, so I don't even know. I can't remember what we talked about. Just the most random stuff out there.
You know, one of the best things about duck hunting is you can take a nap, like when the ducks are slow. Like,
oh, that's so best.
Brian will watch me, like, on the bottom of the boat. I'll just fall asleep. I'll just pass out. And we'll be passed out. I have a problem with talking in my sleep, man. So I'll be laying on the bottom of the boat, just out, like, snoring. And I'll be like, oh, man, Brian, the pintails are coming. And Brian will stand up.
Did you hear those mallards? What are you talking about?
He'll stand up and look for him. But I'm like, all the way out.
Well, we were up at Ruby Marsh for opening day last year. And so Ron and I are in the same tent. We have a couple other guys up with us. Like 1 o'clock in the morning, we're like, oh man, we're late. We got to go. The sun's up. I'm like, dude, it's like midnight. Shut up and go back to sleep. But we had a story. We were out at Bassett hunting Bassett Lake one time. And yeah, it had been a long, the day before was a long day. We're out hunting the next day, and we hunted the morning and we did okay. And so we're still out there in the afternoon and we're both passed out. I mean, and all of a sudden, who was with us?
Ricardo.
Ricardo was with us. Ricardo gets on some ducks and he lays into one, lets the first shot up. Ron and I sit up from a dead sleep, both start shooting at the same time. Just from a dead sleep, just boom, boom, and we're shooting.
Just natural,
yeah. You know, and it's
repetition, sir, muscle memory.
That's the thing about
doing it in our sleep.
That's the thing about duck season is, man, we're driving 3 hours a day when we hunt.
Yeah.
Just each way. So we're up at 1 o'clock in the morning and then you're hunting. And if you don't get a limit, and you know, here a lot of times you're not going to get a limit in the day. So you don't get a limit. You're there till we'll hunt till 5:30.
All day,
night,
day.
And then we'll pull the boat off the water. By the time we do that, it's 7 o'clock at night, and we still got a 3-hour drive home, you know. And then half the time we're getting up to do it the next morning and going and doing it all over again.
Oh yeah.
So by the end of the season, man,
and it's a very physical thing. Like, you're pulling a boat, you're pulling decoys, you're like, you're trundling through water to get the ducks. You know, you're working your dog. You're
by the end of the season, you're just, I mean, you're played out. That's it. I mean, we do. We were both on friends at NRA, and we would go up. They do their their grant meetings every year, and it's Martin Luther King Day weekend. And so we would, we'll have to go up north a lot of times. So we're like, well, we're not going to go up without hunting. So we'll leave Friday early. We'll hunt all day Friday, and we'll drive the rest of the way to Reno, get there about 11 o'clock at night, go sit in a meeting all day Saturday till about 6 or 7 o'clock at night, and then turn around and drive home that same night.
Try to hit ducks on the way home.
Try to hit ducks on the way home, yeah. if we can get to a spot where we can hunt for an hour or two, we will. But it's, you know, but that's just, you get used to it a little bit, but it takes its toll.
I call it duck fatigue. Like, at the end of the season, I'm just burnt out, but, like, the problem is you're burnt out, but you remember what happened at the beginning of last season, you know? At the beginning of last season, you're like, man, it took too long. It took too long to get back on these ducks. And so, even though you're burnt out, you have, like, FOMO. You know what FOMO is?
Nope.
Fear of missing out, you know? And you're like, if I don't go, I'm going to miss out. And at the end of duck season, is like, historically, isn't that good in Southern Nevada? But you're still going out, and you're still trying because you have that FOMO. You're like, I'm going to miss out. I'm going to miss it. And, like, it's happened to me right now. Like, we're about 12 weeks away from opener down here. And I miss it, man. Like, I miss it. I'm ready to go hard. I was like, I don't know why I didn't go so hard last season. Why is that, Brian?
Well, you have a finite amount of days you can hunt, right? So, you know, once that time's over, it's trying to get ready for the next year's hunt and sign up. But it's just, the other thing is, when you're off season, you end up making up for all the stuff you didn't do during the season. So, you know, we laugh because Ron's got the honeydew list at the end of it. He's got to earn those kitchen credits, right? So,
yeah, man, my hunting points.
So you end up doing everything you couldn't get done during the season. So then the next 4 months out of the season, you're beat because you're spending every waking minute trying to make up for stuff you didn't get done during the season. So then you've got, after that, there's that lull between seasons again, and it's just like, man, I just want to be back in a duck blind.
I'm ready to go.
That's like, you know, how I get, like come the season, I'm excited about, like, animals coming in. I'm like, all right, I'm ready to do this again. Then about, like, 2 weeks into it, I'm like, why?
Dude, if you show me another elk, I'm going to shoot you in the head.
Exactly. Someone else called this damn phone right now. I'm done. Is the season over yet? Is it December yet? I'm ready just to start doing the fun stuff and putting them together. And then I start putting them together. I'm like, all right, I'm tired of doing I'm tired of looking at antelope and deer. I want to do something else. I want more new animals to come in. It's something like that. But funny, back to your when you're sleeping in the boat.
Uh-huh.
Me personally, when I fall asleep in, like, duck blind or in, like, a hunting blind, archery hunting, I think that's the best freaking sleep I ever get. Don't know why. You wake up, you're like, oh, that was good. That was good.
I can tell you exactly why, man. When you wake up normally, you wake up and it's time to go to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're probably dreaming about hunting. I don't remember my dreams, but you're probably dreaming about hunting. But when you wake up in a deer blind, you're like, I'm still here. I am still here. We're still hunting.
Did something come in while I was sleeping?
Yeah.
That's like last year, my archery antelope, my brother's sitting in the blind with me, and we got in there at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm doing one of these, nodding off. And he's like, really, already? I said, it's just the start. Somebody got to do it. I'm getting my turn, so when it gets slow, you get to go. And vice versa. You wake me up when there's an animal coming in.
Yeah, I'll wake you up when there's an animal on the ground.
Yeah.
I got my limit, and I'll wake you up, Ron.
Yeah.
It's your turn now.
Well, man, like, I appreciate the good work you do. I appreciate you taking care of memories and taking care of people's stuff. Bradley took care of me a while back. We got in a bad situation. And we got a bad situation with some mounts and some mounts needing to be done. And Bradley didn't have to step up to the plate, but he stepped up to the plate and took care of a lot of people. And a lot of people don't know about that, about you doing that and you taking money out of your pocket to take care of it. And so, like, when it comes to finding a good tax service and, like, supporting a good local business, I can't speak more highly about Coots. You also donate to a lot of these banquets, too. What do you donate to these banquets?
I donate a lot. I donate at least a free shoulder mount, half off, $200 off. I probably donate anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000 worth of credit
per banquet. Right? How many banquets are you going to a year? Probably like 5 to 6.
Probably 5 to 6.
Yeah, so 5 to 6 banquets, like, adds up real quick, man.
That, and then this past season, had a buddy of mine reach out to me. His son had some kind of cancer. I can't think of the name of it, but he did a lifetime dream hunt or something like that. Mm-hmm. Dream Hunt of a Lifetime. Some one of those two. He went to Wyoming, and he got a bull tag. They bought him and took him out hunting. And I called the guy's dad. I said, "Hey, I want to be. I don't know what they have planned, but if he kills a bull, I want to take care of it. I want to do my part and give back. I want to mount his bull for him, no charge. Let me do it." And just stuff like that, I just try to give back to everybody, because I got into this business because I'm a hunter, and I want people to remember their memories, good mounts, get them back quick time, and then I'm building a name for myself too. And so it's just what I can do to give back somewhat to people and help out with stuff.
Yeah, you know? The good thing about you is you're young. We lost a few good taxidermists these last years to just age. Who were they? Like Heads Up, right? We lost her.
Well, she retired. Yeah, we lost her. She retired.
Yeah.
I know Hagen, back in the day when he passed away, he was, for what, back then, he did freaking fantastic work.
So there's Heads Up, and we lost, there's one other one that we lost to an older gentleman.
Was it Great Basin?
Yeah, Great Basin.
Scott, I think is his name. Yeah, Scott. Yeah, I think he moved out, he retired and moved to Overton or something like that.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. The worst thing about taxidermists is they get too old and you lose, like, you're like, man, I've got so many memories with this guy and he's done such good work for me and now he's gone.
And I got to find somebody new.
Yeah, now I got to find somebody new. And then, like, you go and you're like, well, I hope it comes back okay. And it's kind of like a gamble, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's a gamble with a priceless memory. Is my priceless memory going to come back okay? I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Well, and each taxidermist has their own style too, right? So you can have the best taxidermist in the world, but if you have a taxidermist that you like their style and that's what you're used to, and you go to this other guy and it's like
completely different,
it's not the style. It's not the same, right?
It don't look right.
So you gotta. It's,
Horns
it's,
don't match.
Sometimes it's
that's not my rack.
Yeah, that's not my rack.
No, but I know two racks. Sorry.
Well, one's in Ely.
It's a good place to eat at.
It is. We eat there every time we go up there, I think. Oh, yeah. And that's part of it is you just got to find, we talk about that artistic eye, right? So you got to find somebody with kind of that same artistic vision. And that's hard to do.
Oh, yeah.
Because we all think a little bit different. So, you know.
Some people are putting out good stuff and some people just doing commercial work. Average eye, your average person
can't tell.
They don't know. They're like, oh, yeah, it looks good. Or they're doing, they call it museum quality work.
Bass Pro Shop work, huh?
Bass Pro Shop work. I don't know. I don't like talking crap, but everybody all taxidermists talk crap about, especially in this valley.
You're an artist, man. That's what we talked about earlier. We talked about how you can't just bring anybody in and let them run the shop because that's your Picasso, you know? Like you're like, hey, Picasso, why don't you go ahead and regenerate this Picasso? You know? And you're like, well, you can't do that. I mean, you can bring people in to help with certain aspects like flesh in and things of that nature, but again, if you bring in somebody bad and they mess up the flesh, and then you have slippage and you have a mess.
Oh yeah,
you know. So there's a lot of risk with employees.
That's like the kid that doing the apprenticeship with me right now. When he first talked to me, him and his dad did. I looked at him. I said, "What do you know about taxidermy?" He said, "Absolutely nothing." Nothing. I was like, "Perfect. That's what I want. I want to train you to what I know and what I want done. So if you do work out, you start working with me and all that, I can be over here working on this, and I don't got to worry about, like, is he doing it right type of thing."
Well, I know a better way.
Is he making the next slip because he's fleshing it too deep?
I love those ones.
What is it?
I've had a couple people come in. They're like, well, this is how we did it. I'm like, yeah, nope.
Yeah, that's not how I'm doing it. And that's the thing. You can take a Picasso, right? So we talk about the Picasso. You take a Picasso, and you can make a copy of it. And you do a lithograph, but it doesn't look the same as the original. So even if you take something that's identical, make an identical copy of it, it's different, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so there's a lot of soul of a taxidermist that goes into an animal, right? So how do I do the eyes? What do I put in the eyes? You know, there's a lot of thought process in that stuff that you can't mimic by somebody else doing it, right? So the good thing is you get somebody that knows absolutely nothing about taxidermy, comes in, you teach them the way you want to do it, and then you talk them through the process of what you're thinking when you're doing it and how you're doing it. You're going to get close to the product, but it's still not going to be the same product.
It's not going to be the same,
So even having that apprentice there, you're still going to have something different. But hopefully the idea is that you create somebody good enough that when you can no longer be in the business, that they could take that spot and fill that customer void. So it makes a big difference.
Oh, yeah.
And then the customers are used to them, right? So if I see a guy in the shop for 15 years and he's apprenticed and worked his way up and started doing work, I've talked to that guy. We've developed a relationship. Exactly. So now when I need a new taxidermist, he's a natural fit for me to go into, right? So it makes it good for everybody because you got some comfort with them. Mm-hmm. They're gonna know you because they've done work for you in the past. You know, whether even if it's just flesh and stuff, you know, in the past, at least you know that person. It's not a young punk kid that, yeah, I'm the best taxidermist ever was, and some of these pictures that we have on this on the wall over there. But you know, and you can get cheap taxidermy.
Oh, you can. You can
get a lot of cheap taxidermy. Oh,
yeah. You pay for what you get. That's what I look at.
Well, we were looking at an auction one time.
Or you get lucky. Sometimes you get lucky, but sometimes, not very often, man.
Yeah, not very often.
Ron and I were looking at some taxidermy at an auction so we could fill some space up, and we were looking at some taxidermy, and we were like, dude, it's going for a lot of money. It's not even good.
Was it just this past weekend?
No, it was
it was the Clark County one the past
weekend. Well, there was a Clark County one, but there was one a couple months before that. Okay. I'm just like, really? I'm like,
and the prices people were paying for was outrageous. I was like,
I was looking at the Clark County one this past weekend. Yeah. I was like, if I'm buying, I'm just buying it for the horns. I'm gonna cut them off, and like, there's the caribou and then the red stag. I was like, if I get it for cheap, just to have the rack.
Up until the day before auction, man, that stuff was all going dirt cheap.
I know. I was like, maybe I'll score. Then the auction came. I was like, I'm done.
There's Boone and Crockett stuff. I put a couple bids on it. It was like $30 and $40, and nobody bid on it.
You were bidding against me.
Yeah, exactly.
Why see how you are each other up?
And then I go back the next morning, and that same amount's like $250. I'm like, what the hell just happened?
Hey, Bradley, you know this Austin Burns guy?
Mm-hmm.
He's talking crap about you, man.
Oh, is he?
He says you do great work.
Oh,
yeah, he highly recommends you.
Thanks, Austin.
Yeah, Austin, you're a good guy, man.
That's my wife's cousin.
Is it?
Yeah, it'll be my cousin too, I guess. Yeah, if you want to say it is my cousin. There you go.
You are now related after 8 years, man.
Yeah.
How many branches does that tree have? Just ask him.
It's an aspen. They're all related. Down at the roots. So.
Oh yeah.
At least it's not a 2x4, I guess.
Anyways, hey, did you draw anything this year? You got any tags coming up?
I didn't get nothing. I got skunked. No. The only tags we got coming up is my brother's archery deer and then his wife's bull elk tag.
Okay. If you could give one piece of advice to a new hunter, even in big game, what would you tell him?
If you're going to mount it, go do some YouTube watching, learn how to skin. Skin it right. And then for people that have been hunting for a while, try not to leave 30 pounds of meat on the cape. That'll make me very happy. And that your mount will turn out fantastic, I can promise you.
Yeah, so get the cape done. Hey, do you want to announce what we're doing this weekend if anybody wants to come? They're listening.
Yeah, we can announce that. So this weekend, with the wind group that we're running out on the board of, we're doing a bunch of projects probably up in that area, but we're going to be up at Nesbitt we're going to be clearing out some of the reeds, the cattails from around the duck hunting area, so we can get a little bit more open area for the ducks to come in.
And feed.
We're going to, and more feed area for them. We're going to be rehabbing some of the blinds out there, and we're going to be installing some new goose boxes as well. We're going to start 5:30 in the morning up there.
Yeah, because it's supposed to get up to 105, I just read today, but at 5:30 in the morning, it's going to be around 70.
So we'll bring some brush hogs and stuff up there with us, donuts, sandwiches for lunch. Bring some work gloves if you got waders, muck boots, stuff like that. Always goes a long ways. Maybe some, you know, work gloves, hammers, stuff like that.
Or just, if you can't do any of it, just come hang out, because every single person that comes, we get to count their hours to it.
If we can, if somebody's got one, what we really are in need of is we'd really like to have a drone. When we put the goose boxes in this last season, we needed an aerial view, so we go back and look later at some of the stuff, because
they're ones that we didn't put in. We can't find.
Yeah, we can't find some of these. So if we have somebody with a drone that could come up there and run some drone footage for us as well, I mean, it would be super helpful. It's an area that gets a little bit of hunting pressure up there. It's a really good habitat. I know Andrew's doing a really good job at trying to make it a better habitat. So the more we can do as sportsmen, I know we've got a few people coming up, so it should be a good time.
It's going to be a party, man. It's going to be fun.
We'll be out of there as soon as it starts to get hot. We're going to be out of there. So pretty much by noon, we figure we'll be completely done with everything. But the more hands we get in there, the more projects we can add to the list. So Jason's got stuff to help rehab some of the blinds. He's got stuff for the goose boxes. We got some stuff. If you got a big brush hog, obviously that would help a little bit. pitchforks.
Yeah, we're not talking about, like, I was up there last weekend running that brush hog, and we're not talking about, like, weed whackers. We're talking about, like, they have to have, like, solid metal blades on the bottom, or else you can't cut through it.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy duty. So we've got a couple. But, yeah, come up, have a good time. I mean, if you can just sit there and cheer us on, that
take pictures, run the water jug.
We still, what play happens
water
is...
Boy. Play water boy.
Yeah, what happens is you get the Pittman Robertson money. So for every person that's out there, we get to put them in for the time they were there. We also get to put them in for all their mileage and stuff. So when we do that, that money we get to take out of the federal coffers from our taxes that we put in for ammunition and firearms. And that money comes back to the state of Nevada that we can use for wildlife improvement. So it helps all the hunters, not just the duck hunters. So if you come out and, but I'm a deer hunter, I don't want to go do this stupid duck project. Well, that's fine, but that money's still going to go back in endow, and it's going to help improve all the habitats. And I'll tell you, with the WIN group, we do a lot of duck projects because that's Ron and I's passion, and we're on the board. But we also do a lot of drinkers for big game as well.
We've rehabbed Pine Springs. We assisted with that. And then we have the McFarland drinker, and we have several other drinkers we're working on. So we work on drinkers too.
So we've got drinkers all throughout the state, and we're kind of expanding. So we do a lot of different projects. You know, come join us. Get on our projects list. If you know, you can send us an email at battlebornduckers@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You get a hold of Ron or I. And we'll get you on our list, and when we see how these projects come up, we'll let you know as well. But I mean, this project will be good. It's in Hyco. If you don't know where Nesbitt is, so it's in Hyco. So if you go out past Alamo, you make a left towards Hyco, and it's going to be off on your right hand side. You'll see the signs for Nesbitt. It's going to be what, like 10 miles after the cutoff.
There's
something
a link
like
on our website that drops you right on it.
Yeah, if you go to Battleborn Duckers on our Facebook page, it'll drop you right there. Like I said, if you have questions, you can call Ron or I, or you can send us a message on our Battleborn Duckers.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to conservation, there's several ways you can conserve. You know, there's actually man hours coming, man in that hammer. There's the political aspect, which Mike Reese does. And then the third way is kind of what Bradley does, is the financial thing, where he comes out and supports all these banquets financially. And so, like, if you can't swing a hammer or you don't want to show up, you know, be like Bradley. Get out there and, like, throw some cash their way. But I've seen Bradley at projects too.
But
you've done some of them, haven't you? You've been to some guzzlers.
Yeah, I've been to a couple of them.
I think the financial side gets a bad name because
it's a lazy side.
Well, no,
it's not,
because
I don't want to spend my money.
We're begging from the organizations, because it's like we're begging for money. But I will tell you, just our personal with the WIN group, is what's happened with these wildlife conservation groups is none of us have been able to have banquets for a year.
Yeah.
So what should have got us through a year of projects has now had to stretch for 2 years. And so every single organization's hurting for money, and they don't have the money that they had. So we're having to prioritize projects based on what we have funding for, right? So we have to keep a certain amount in reserve, because if we don't, our biggest fundraiser is our banquet. If we don't keep that money in reserve, we don't have a banquet next year. So we can't raise the money we did. And we did very well at our last banquet, and we were lucky enough that we were the last club to get in. Some of these clubs are going on 2 years without any income coming in. So if you can't help and you have the means to give them 20, 30 bucks, whatever, or donate an item for their next banquet so they can auction it off, or those things go a long ways to making these projects happen. I can tell you that we got the Desert Bighorn Fraternity. We've got Wildlife Habitat Improvement Nevada. You've got Trout Unlimited. You've got Ducks Unlimited. You've got all these clubs.
Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation.
Rocky Mountain Elk that all have kind of their niche. But you can find a club that supports your cause. And man, if it's just going out, and sometimes you can go out and check a guzzler when you're out on a hunt, and you can log those hours in and get Nevada the credit for doing that volunteer work. It doesn't have to be a formal thing, but it helps when it's a formal thing, because we can put that manpower into getting a lot of work done in a little bit of time. So I know Ron will have more projects coming up this year as well. We're going to probably go up
we're
north to Sunnyside.
Low,
yeah, we're probably going to do some stuff out in Overton, but it's going to be, like I said, the finances aren't there to do big projects that we'd like to do.
We had some more finance, we'd do some more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, come out and join us on Saturday. Like I said, you don't have to do the manual labor stuff. Come out and hang out. It's a bunch of like-minded sportsmen. It's a good group of guys. Last time we had, what, 15 or 20 guys out there?
It looks like we're going to have about that many this time. So you get to hang out with a bunch of people that are like you, you know, people that like to work, people that like wildlife, people that are passionate about it. And, you know, sometimes you go to these family gatherings or barbecues or, you know, just get-togethers, and you have to hang out with people that you're like, man, these are not kind of the same cloth as me. And you're like, what am I doing here? But every single time I had a project, like, it's just like there's a bunch of people like you, and it's very enjoyable.
Well, and you know? we've talked about it before. Bradley talked about it being in the shop, and he's hearing everybody's honey holes, right? I'm giving you my honey holes. I will tell you, if you're going to hear a honey hole from Ron and I, it's going to be probably in a conversation at a project. And it just kind of, because it's kind of natural, you're talking about stuff. But, you know, for us, we don't mind that as much because they're putting in the effort, right? So if you're going to come out and help on projects and stuff, putting the effort, we're going to make sure that we help you out in any way we can. So I think it goes a long ways just to come up and Ron and I have it. We say it all the time. You know, you got it. You can do two things. You can either show up or you can shut up. Exactly. So if you're not going to show up, shut up. Don't be bitching about it if you're not willing to come in and put in the time.
And or the money. You can pay also, and you also don't have to shut up.
Yeah, I mean, or the political side. So if you're going to show up at those things, but that's the thing, is it's important that we as sportsmen take care of our own first, you know, and then when it comes down to time for the antis come after us, we can say, but wait a minute, these are the projects we've done to improve the environment and to improve the habitat. What have you done? So
it's like someone showing up to work and complaining and they don't even work there. You know, like, I hate this place. You guys are horrible. Be like, you don't even work here, man. We're doing all the work. Where are you at?
Yeah.
You
exactly.
know, your input is really appreciated, but we're going to go ahead and pass on it.
Yeah, but we don't care. That's plain so. But, all right. Well, we're about.
Hey, do you got any final words, any final things you'd like to, like, your shout outs where you're at on Instagram where people can find you if they want to look for you?
Yeah, Instagram. What is it? @coots_taxidermy.
Mm-hmm.
TikTok. I'm pretty big on TikTok.
I mean, how many followers you got on that?
It's kind
TikTok?
Of a big deal.
I'm at 90,000 right now.
90,000?
Yeah. I'm trying to hit 100.
The commie is paying it yet?
Hey, yeah. Do you hear that? He's trying to hit 100. What? So everybody go hit Coots Taxidermy up on TikTok.
Yeah,
so
go give him some
get
love.
Get to 100,000.
I'm trying. I don't know. I get a little bit of pay on TikTok. You get paid for so many views. Like, I think it's every 1,000 views you get.
It's like $0.02 a thousand. Yeah, or something like that.
It's nothing. I mean, I think I got like $114 wrapped
that's
up
Red
in
Bull
it.
Money right there,
I'm
man.
I'm like, yeah, that's energy drinks for hunting season. Let's go.
It's my tag applications for next year.
I was like, yeah, and I get to put in, all that money just goes back to, or the videos and all that I do on there just goes to my Instagram and my Facebook. So it's pretty simple.
So you got Instagram, you got Facebook, you got TikTok. Do you got a website?
I got a website. It's www.coots.com.
Okay.
And then, that's about it.
Yeah. So if you want to hang out with him, it's very easy. All you have to do is pay him money and bring your mounts to him. You know, and he will listen to you for a half an hour minimum. That's what he's committed to on the show.
After that, the fee goes up.
It's $20 a minute.
Exactly.
Oh, man, I sure appreciate you for having you on the show.
I appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on with us. As we, say all the time, if you're going to go out this weekend, make sure you take somebody with you. If you're going to take somebody with you, make sure you teach them something. If you can't take somebody or teach somebody, make sure you hunt hard.